Welcome, everyone, to whatever today is, July 28th, 2021, and our Platinum and A to Z call. Terrific. Let's see. I have one announcement and then one thing I just want to talk about, although I see Cheryl's hands up already, but I think, Cheryl, can you stay on for like 3 minutes? I'm just going to talk about a research paper I was reading. Does that work? Or do you need to jump?
I did not mute myself. Yeah, fine. No problem.
Okay, great. So next call is August 10th at 8 p.m. Please make sure that you register using the link that you're going to get on the 1st of August. We've had to switch Zoom accounts. I believe Nicole moved. Anybody who has already registered, Nicole moved you over, but I just want to make sure that you have the correct link. We've been bouncing through several of Good Dog Zoom accounts, trying to make sure we don't have any conflicts. Then, as I want to do, I was reading a 1997 research paper, which I know is just a crazy thing to do on a beautiful summer day. But this was the research paper that made me encourage you guys and to myself collect amniotic fluid from puppies, from the whelping of puppies during C-sections. So I went back over that research paper because I think they just did some fascinating stuff. So it was 30 litters, they had a control group, nine bitches were allowed to whelp naturally and do whatever they wanted. They ate placentas, they licked puppies, they got amniotic fluid. 100% of those bitches accepted 100% of their puppies immediately. No rejections, no concerns, nothing. Litter sizes range from 4 to 9. Then they took the remaining 21 puppies and divided them up into 7 groups. And the first 7, they did a fake wash of the puppies after birth. So the puppy was born. As soon as it was out of the sack, they took the puppy over to the sink. They turned the water on. They moved their hands. They pretended to wash the puppy off. But in reality, they didn't wash any of the amniotic fluid off. Took the puppy back to the moms. 100% of those moms accepted 100% of those puppies. The next group that they manipulated, the next 7, they actually washed them. So they took the puppies right after birth. They washed them 3 times. They got all the amniotic fluid off. They gave the puppies back to the mothers. 100% of the mothers rejected 100% of those puppies. So in the last group, they had another 7 litters and they took the puppies. They used syringes and got amniotic fluid and they saved at least, I think, just 1 placenta, but I actually don't remember the number, but they saved a placenta. The placenta and the amniotic fluid in a syringe went into the refrigerator for 36 hours. They washed the puppies completely, just like they had in the second group. They put the puppies back with their moms. 100% of those dams rejected 100% of those puppies. And rejected was not willing to touch, not willing to lick, not willing to clean, might have been aggressive. No protective response if someone came to touch the puppies. Just no response whatsoever. So 100% rejection, 36 hours. They then bring the amniotic fluid and the placenta out of the refrigerator. They warm it to about 100 degrees for 30 minutes. They gave it back to they coated the puppies with the amniotic fluid. They gave the bitch the puppies that she had rejected and the placenta, and 100% of the bitches accepted 100% of the puppies. So obviously, this is not a foolproof method, but there's a couple of things to think about. One, the importance of amniotic fluid. So we are cleaners, you know, we're cleaners by nature. That's what dog breeders do. And so in our cleaning, we may actually be detracting from this bonding between mom and puppies. And we don't really know what the hormonal chemical connection is between dams and puppies, especially at the beginning. But we have a good idea that amniotic fluid is really important to that process, at least until nursing starts, lactation starts. That's one. Two, I think some of the details, I haven't done a great job translating for everybody. So one of those details is refrigerating or cooling the amniotic fluid and the placenta. And in the end, they decided the placenta was less important than the amniotic fluid. So they gave the bitch the placenta, but they didn't rub it on the puppies or anything like that. They just used the amniotic fluid. So cooling it right after whelping or soon after whelping, I do think is really important. I think from all of our experience, those people that have been in Avadog for a while, we found that there is a deterioration in amniotic fluid. I don't know if it's oxidation. I don't know what it is that changes it, but we need to refrigerate it right off the bat. And the warming of it was a piece that I just hadn't really thought about. And I'm glad I went back to that paper to read through how they did it. So they brought it back to 100 degrees, 30 minutes. So now the placenta might not have been warmed all the way through. Apparently these bitches didn't hesitate and just gobbled down the placenta. I think they said like eagerly or voraciously was the word they used. I can tell you mine have never done that. But the amniotic fluid at that point would be at 100 degrees, obviously safer for the puppy to put a fluid on it that is at its body temperature or a little above. But also you have to wonder if that triggers a different response in the bitch than say cooled fluid or even room temperature amniotic fluid. So I know that a lot of us struggle post-C-section, particularly with maiden bitches, to get them to accept their puppies. And this is something I think we really need to play with, and we need to gather information. We need to share information amongst us on what is working, what didn't work, how many bitches, was it effective with. And I think that those characteristics, and I'm going to put them in A to Z, the characteristics that they considered rejection by the dam, which I think are really powerful for us to think about. Unwilling to lick the puppy, unwilling to allow the puppy to nurse, no response to strangers coming near the puppy, and possibly aggression. They didn't have a lot of aggression in their bitches. And I think most of us don't have a lot of aggression, but we have some. So I wanted to raise that again. And I also wanted to remind us that if we have a C-section, yes, we have to towel off the puppies, but we don't have to make them so clean that there's no amniotic fluid remaining for the bitch to have that bonding experience. And they proposed a bunch of reasons why amniotic fluid may be that attractive to bitches. I don't think anybody has tested that. So, and that research was done a while ago, but it's not, the research was supported by the NIH, which typically does human, most of the money goes into human research, and obviously amniotic fluid is not really something that's going to be pursued in human beings as beneficial. So anyway, I wanted to bring that up. Yeah, so Mary, I think that's a really good point. Mary asks, would it be a good idea to save amniotic fluid just in case our bitches need to take in orphans? And or if your bitch crashes, I think soon after birth, I was thinking the exact same thing. I see no harm in just syringing amniotic fluid up. Just get 10 cc syringes. There's plenty of it at birth, and collect it up in the syringes and then freeze it. And it may well benefit tremendously if we either need to move puppies. So Mary, I was just thinking about that research paper. So one of the things they did with that second category of puppies that were 100% of them were rejected by their dams, they put the amniotic fluid on them and gave them to other bitches. It was outside of the experiment, but the puppies needed to be raised. And all of those puppies were raised successfully by other bitches. And so it does seem to be that this could be a really powerful way to help us move puppies between bitches and assist bitches that are having trouble. I'm sorry, I'm laughing, but I just read Mary's comment that she's got everything else in the freezer. And so why not? Having just moved my swabs and my pads the other day, for those of you who collect stud dogs and might have used estrus pads in your freezer, just stick your syringe full of amniotic fluid next to it. Okay, so that was my fun reading for today. Cheryl, your hand has been up. Do you want to unmute? Maybe Cheryl's disappeared. I'll put her hand back up. Oh, I can't do that. Cheryl, when you get back, I'll keep an eye out. Okay. Other questions, comments? Kelsey, can you share? Like, I'm actually putting the paper in the breeder resources. So stay tuned. Right as I was getting onto the call, I shot it to Nicole, and she's uploading it. So you will have the actual paper. Cheryl.
I'm back. If
hey, go for it.
Get it to unmute. Sorry.
No worries.
So my puppies will be 3 weeks tomorrow, and they gain between 5 and 10% the first week. The second week, and this has been my experience with all my Quaker litters, the second week it's considerably less. And then now by the third week, about 2 to 5% is all I'm getting. The smallest puppy, the last 2 days, has only gained 1% in each 12-hour period. And I got her to take a bottle about a week ago, and she took it fine. And I cannot get her to take one for anything. I tried for 20 minutes this morning. If I put the Cairo syrup on the nipple, she'd suck for a second.
And then she gets all the sugar off, and then
she screams and carries on. And, you know, and then I'll give the rest of the bottle to a bigger puppy, and they just latch right on and love it. But she will not. But she seems fine otherwise. Would you be at all concerned?
I wouldn't if you are seeing she's active. When do you usually start weaning?
Usually 3.5 to 4 weeks, but I was wondering, should I try her on, start her earlier? She's at like 760 grams, the largest puppies at probably 1150, and they range.
So they're 21 days?
They will be tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah, you know, ideally we don't start real early, but ideally they gain weight, and ideally they're not stubborn little cusses who won't take the bottle. I was just talking to Brent about the same thing. He cannot get his puppies to take a bottle, just determined to not do it. Mary's showing one of her nipples. Is that Dr. Brown's man?
That's what I have, is the Dr. Brown's.
This is a Nook nipple on a Dr. Brown's bottle. And then I got the vented Playtex bottles, which have, if I could get this out, this kind of a nipple. My puppies hate, will not, a standard looks like the, you know, tip of your finger. Even though they'll suck your finger, they will not suck this. But the flattened flattens out, they will take that. And so that's the only nipple my puppies will take.
I'm grabbing a link to that, I think, because it is
and Nook
UK.
In UK. Yeah.
Nipple.
Okay.
So she took it one time, and the time she took it, once I got her going, which I had to let her nurse and then trick her and stick the nipple in her mouth, but that didn't work anymore. But she gained like 14% in the one day she took it. So it's like she's hungry.
Yeah.
Have you done it while she is on mom? So she's laying on mom and you just have the nipple on mom?
Yeah, that's what I try. And she's just like screams and carries on and flails and like she's burning more energy fighting me than
it's not awesome to feed them early, but I'd probably feed her, you know, and just see, do you have moose or something really?
That's a moose I could try. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause she's pretty small to even start on softened kibble at this point, and you're probably still going to get more sucking behavior. And so you don't want chunks. You just want so something. I could
just put it on my finger and let her. Yep. Just suck your finger.
Oh my gosh. You know, she
not take that bottle.
I was saying to somebody the other day, you know, so often you read the books and they say neonate puppies are just helpless. And I keep thinking, you have never tried to get them to suck on something they don't want to suck on. A nipple, you know, mom's nipple, nope, I don't want that. Or a bottle. Oh my gosh.
Mary, Tracy Urban had a technique where she had a tube going by the nipples. So you've got mom's nipple and a tube that would go in and dribble a little bit with mom's nipple to supplement. And I can't remember exactly how she described it. I don't see if Tracy Urban's on here. Maybe I'll encourage her to post on the group. On because she's done lactation stuff with human babies, and one of the things that they do is while the baby's suckling, the mom dribble formula in, and that way the baby's getting the formula but still suckling to stimulate milk production. And I never figured it out. My puppies were so excited to take the nipple, only if it was the Nook nipple, because if it was the regular Playtex nipple, they act like I was poisoning them. But I'll ask Tracy Urban to post that because it sounded like a really nice technique.
Kate posted it. She's also in, I believe, also into human lactation, and she just posted SNS, supplemental nursing system. So that might be something, you're a midwife. I knew that there was some connection there. So Cheryl, take a look at that link, grab that link before you jump off on supplemental nursing system. And we'll try and also put that into the Facebook group. Erin mentioned Karen Cusick nipples. She is on the Canine Fertility Facebook group with Susan Patterson. They have a great reputation. My puppies did not like them. But I think you just have a bunch of nipples in the house and you let the puppies pick the one that they're planning on using, because it is really hard to convince them. When they say no, it is often a really persistent no. Yeah, Mary says, wishing Karen would provide an MSDS on the nipples. Yeah. I wonder if we could fund that for her. I wonder what that takes. That's a really good point, Mary. Because her nipples are really well regarded, and they come in a lot of different sizes, which is nice, because obviously when we're using human babies, our choices are like preemie and bigger. So let us know, Cheryl, and see what she does and see if just a little food, real food, solid food starts to get her weight back up. Because you don't, you know, at 760 versus 1150, that's a big difference.
Yeah. Okay. I am, I have another question for later. I'll let someone else go, but I'm going to re-raise my hand and it's real.
Sounds okay. Good.
I'll just leave her. Yeah. Okay. Good. Thank you.
I'm going to go to Cindy because I didn't see who popped up first. Hi, Cindy. Are you there?
Hello?
Hey there. Hi, how are you? Hi, Cindy. How are you?
I am fine.
Oh, good. I haven't talked to you in a while.
It has been a while. I am learning so much because I don't breed that often. And I just bred a maiden bitch to my maiden boy. And he was great. He was phenomenal. We did everything. And of course, had him tested. And we were testing her too. And I was very lucky to have a super experienced Wheaton breeder come to my house. My girl was 6.8 on Monday last week when we tested her last. And so my friend came in that day and we got the dogs together and did a breeding. She was not excited about it. She did have a minor stricture, which the vet dissolved with her finger. And she said, it won't be a problem, but she may have some tightness. So, you know, we had to use a muzzle. She would have bit us, you know, a soft muzzle just on her nose, not the great big kind. And I held her head, and Susie and the other woman who owns the stud with me. It were three of us. All right. So the second day, we skipped Tuesday, did Wednesday morning. She's still the same thing. She would bite. She stood after the process began and he ejaculated. She was okay, but she didn't like it. And then we decided to just do one more AI on Thursday night just to be a natural breeding. And it ended up being an AI because she went ballistic. She was going to tear us all off. So we thought, okay, she's done. But any thoughts on that? Is it just a maiden bitch?
I mean, some bitches don't like to breed. Some bitches don't like to breed certain boys. In fact, I have some research papers in the Breeder Resources about from the Berkeley dog studies back in the 60s and 70s, where they clearly showed that bitches have preferences. They have friends and they have mates, and they aren't necessarily the same dogs. So they will hang out with their friends when they're not in season. And then when they're in season, they will have nothing to do with their friends and they only want the stud that they choose. So it could be that you bred her early. So Monday was early, and that probably was extremely uncomfortable for her. So she wasn't ready to breed. And when we breed bitches, when they aren't ready to breed, we put a really bad taste in their mouth because it's painful. You know, there's a reason the vulva swells. There's a reason the vulva softens. And so when you breed a bitch before that process has taken place, then it can really hurt them. And now they think, holy cow, when that dude gets on me, this really hurts.
Okay, so she was
significantly early. So she might have ovulated on Monday. That means she would not have been ready to breed until Wednesday at the earliest.
So Wednesday. Yep.
She might not have ovulated until Tuesday. And then Wednesday would have been early as well. So it's hard to know whether it was she just doesn't like to breed, whether it was he is not going to be my puppy daddy, or if it started too early and therefore put a bad taste in her mouth and she was not going to be a participant in this. So go back, now that you've done that, I want you to go back to the breeding diary in A to Z, because it walks you through what's happening at each of those progesterone levels. And I think it's really important for us to make sure our bitches are ready when we breed them, because she might have been telling you, no, don't do this, and you insisted, and she now isn't too hyped up about this. So hopefully next time you'll wait a little bit longer, and she will kind of have forgotten this. It will be, 8 months or something. And she'll be a little bit more ready and a more willing partner, but that'll give you an idea. The next breeding will give you
an idea. Okay, it isn't going to be
into breeding or not.
She's not going to be psychologically colored by this then, do you think?
Well, you know, I don't think she's going to be horribly devastated unless she's a very sensitive dog. But if you think about it, you know, there is a trust factor there that we breed them when they're ready to breed. And when we don't do that and we force the issue, yeah, you know, it is kind of a trust-breaking situation. So I would spend time with her and try and rebuild right. that. And next time, you know, pop on the Facebook group, reach out so we can get, make sure that that timing, I mean, you'll hear me say it's not about getting that semen in early if the bitch is saying no. If some bitches will breed on the LH peak. You know, some bitches would have bred on Saturday, but they're rare. Those are not common bitches. And so getting that, that's one of the reasons I push timing so much so that we're being super fair to our bitches. But, I doubt that it was a devastating thing, but I would, you know, rebuild it.
Yeah, and she's very, very affectionate. She's by my side all the time and I'm giving her lots of love. So
good.
Okay,
good.
Thank you.
Good luck. Let us know how it goes.
I will.
Okay. Juliet. Are you?
Hello.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. How are you? Everybody's good. Question about puppy. My puppies are just over 2 weeks old, and I'm wondering about outdoor temperatures and like when it's appropriate to bring them outside. And I'm sure it's in there somewhere, but I just haven't come across it, you know, for the adventure walks and all that kind of stuff. But I'd love to bring them outside when it's nice out. But what I don't breed, know when that's appropriate.
Remind me the breed, Juliet.
A golden retrievers.
So the thing to remember about 2-week-old puppies, 3-week-old puppies, 4 and even 5-week-old puppies is they don't have great cooling systems. Dogs have horrible cooling systems as it is. Who ever thought of a tongue for a active animal wearing a coat as being the correct cooling mechanism? Not that I would question that. But puppies are worse. And so typically when you hit 75 or 78, puppies are beginning to overheat. Okay. When a golden puppy can go low, at 2 weeks, I would probably not take them out. I'd shoot for like 60 to 75 degrees. Obviously, humidity will play a role. More humid it is, the more challenge they're going to have cooling themselves. And dampness matters on the coolant. So puppies can tolerate much lower temperatures when they're dry than when they're wet, because as you know, puppy coats are kind of useless as it is. You know, they just don't have what, if you think about what a golden retriever adult's coat, how it sheds water and forms that jacket, doesn't happen with puppies. So you're going to look for those moderate temperatures, 60 to 75, shade, no sun, and really short periods. But It's great to go put them on the grass. It's sort of like an early scent introduction experience for them to just go sniff the grass. Often you'll get a lot of crying because it is stressful for them. They wouldn't normally be out if they were a village dog or a free-ranging dog. They would not be out of the den until closer to 3.5 weeks. So monitor their stress. And if they're just crying, you know, 3 minutes and take them back in.
Okay.
The best way to do it, obviously, is take them out when they're nursing. So put mom out there, lie her down, bring the puppies out. That's usually a great experience. Once you get into, so typically around 4 to 4.5 weeks, they can start having playtime outside depending upon sort of the safety of your area. But if it's covered and protected from wildlife, then 4 to 4.5 weeks is usually a great time for them to have daily outdoor time. You won't get an adventure walk in until 5.5 weeks at the earliest. So typically that following instinct starts maybe at 5.5 to, you know, so 5 weeks, 4 days, 5 weeks, 5 days. There's usually this huge change over a these 24-hour periods where they just start following better and better. But the heat, okay. Are you in a hot area, Juliet? Remind me.
Well, we're getting up to 100 this week. So next week it should be in the 80s. But in the mornings, it's nice mornings. And cool.
Yeah, so mornings and evenings are great times for pups to be out in the summer.
Yeah.
And when you think about where you're going to do your adventure walks, think about doing your best to start them off in a shady area. Because if we just get them out of the car or get them out of the pen and it's just this expanse of sun and heat, usually you're going to get much worse following than if you are able to start them out in the shade where it's cool or cooler and get them going. And then they can usually cross sunny areas, but you want that start to be positive.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Can I ask?
I'm in no rush to get them outside. I just am, you know, kind of trying to figure out what that temperature range would be and how they would react to it. And we have a deck that's all covered and secure. So we're kind of looking forward to them being outside and having some fun out there.
I know, it's so much fun. So I usually think about 3 weeks as being a great time to take my golden puppies out for the first time.
Okay.
You can always bring grass in. Have you done early scent introduction and did you do grass?
I have not done grass, but I will do that today. Today is their last day, so I'll do grass today. Oh.
Grass and dirt, they're like the best.
Okay.
So yeah, try that. And that's a great way to sort of introduce them to the outdoors without the inherent stress and risk. So think about 3 weeks on the deck. Think about somewhere between 60 and 75. So that's probably going to be early in the morning, late in the evening. And then as you think about your adventure walk starting 5.5 at the earliest, 6 weeks most likely, you're going to think about cool starts, if not cool walks.
I hope so at that time of year, August.
I know. My gosh, I've had litters in heat waves and we were out there at first light. We were out there with flashlights. I mean, but I've had litters in the winter too, where the temperature never got above freezing. And so there is like spring and fall are great litters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, well, thank you.
Cheryl had a question. Yeah, just right, it's not going to get below 80 ever, and it's extremely humid. And so I usually take my puppies out at 4 weeks early in the morning. Would you consider that safe? I mean, it will be in the low 80s, you know, if I go out at before daylight. You know?
I don't think it's unsafe, Cheryl. I think they just can't get as much out of it, but I don't think at 80 they're going to be harmed. They're just going to be hot. It is a great time to introduce like pans of water.
That's what I would take a litter pan because they're so tiny and they can get in that. And
I used to put ice cubes in ours. So, you know, I would just dump ice, you know, put water and put some ice cubes in it and then play with the ice cubes and it would keep the water cooler. So those are ways to do it as well.
But I thought I'd wait till at least four and a half weeks because it's so hot. Do you agree with that?
I would. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, we don't want to take them out and have them miserable because then they're like, this is no fun. I do not want to go out here.
Right.
And so I think that you're smart to wait. They have terrible cooling systems up until 2.5 or 3 weeks, and then they gradually get better. They never get great, but they gradually get better.
Okay, thanks.
I'll pop back to you in a sec. I want to get to Nancy. Nancy, are you there?
Yeah.
Hey.
Hey, there I am.
Hey there. Good to see you. Out.
What are your thoughts about trialing a bitch that we don't know yet if she's pregnant? So it would be either first trimester or beginning of second. And it would be for nose work at the elite level.
Tell me how much this bitch has been out trialing. Oh, at the elite level. She's been trialing a lot.
Yes.
So let's look at the pros and the cons. because she's been out a lot, she most likely carries the herpes virus in her body. Mm-hmm. It sounds terrible, but it's a good thing. Because if they don't, if they're what we call a naive bitch who does not carry the herpes virus in her body and comes in contact with it during pregnancy, you're probably going to lose the litter. So she most likely, since 80% of the North American population of dogs carries herpes virus, she most likely has come in contact with it, built up immunity to it. So so that's a pro for her, that she's probably protected from that and that's not going to be an issue. What's one of the cons? That there's some other virus or disease that's at the trial that she comes in contact with and she has no immunity to. So I don't know of any that are going around right now, but if you think back to when the canine flu hit, our dogs had absolutely no protection against canine flu. If they came in contact with the virus, they were going to get infected. And that we didn't want with pregnant bitches. So that's always a risk when we take our pregnant bitches out our lactating bitches out, that there's a disease out there that we're just not aware of and they come in contact with it. Other questions to ask yourself. So think about a scale. How much does she love trialing at the elite level? And how much is it stressful for her? Because elite's hard. So <Yeah. laughs> you know, it's not like I'm just going and playing nose work. Right. I'm trialing at a pretty high level. So I always think of it in field as going out and throwing marks for a dog versus running master.
Okay.
So running master is always hard, even for great dogs. Going out and picking up marks is often not at all stressful for a pregnant bitch. So you have to sort of spend some time mulling on that. And as you're thinking about it, toss in that we have some evidence that when bitches do the work we want the puppies to do, that the puppies are better at it. So when we work a pregnant bitch, her puppies will be better because we worked her while she was pregnant. Nobody really knows why, but it's pretty clear in mice and rats, that if a pregnant bitch is taught a maze while she's pregnant, she's never done it before, she does it while she's pregnant, those pups will be able to do the maze better as adults. Go figure. I have no idea like how that would even happen, but if you have been in the hunting world for a while, I would say all the old hunters that I was raised by said, hunt your pregnant bitches and your pups will hunt better. So there's sort of the anecdotal old hunter's tale in dogs. Right. And then there's this rodent research. So, you know, it's your decision. There are risks. There may be really good benefits. You might be able to get those benefits without the stress of a competition and all day in the car and the heat and the traveling. Or she may be a dog. I mean, I had a dog that got out of the van at every trial, like the Queen of England, probably happier than the Queen of England. She was like, my people are here. I am here to show off. And she ate up trialing, but not every dog does. So is that helpful?
Yeah, that's very helpful. She loves it. She parades around, but I don't think I'm going to do it. I'm picking up some birds today for her, so she'll be playing with birds.
And you can, you know, the thing about scent work is you can do it anywhere. You know, all you have to do is just go do some hides, and she can get the work and the fun. Yeah, I don't trial my bitches anymore at any time in pregnancy, and it's only because I don't want to deal with the downside. Like, I worked so hard to get them pregnant. The thought of losing puppies or losing a litter, just not
worth it. Yeah. So I was going to take the younger one, so I probably shouldn't even take her.
You know, so the only risk you'll have with the younger one, aside from perhaps a little jealousy, is that there is this disease out there that we don't know about that she brings home, because she's not going to bring herpes virus home because chances are your bitch has it. Mm-hmm. Kennel cough can be an issue, but the vast majority of pregnant bitches, I don't know if she's been vaccinated or not, but they, kennel cough's usually not a huge deal. Okay. It might cough some, but it isn't going to affect, it's most likely going to have no impact on the puppies. I know we've had a few cases in Avidog of seriously sick bitches, but they're rare. So the bigger issue is trialing the young one when you have puppies on the ground. Would highly recommend you not do. Less of an issue during pregnancy, but still there is that risk and you have to balance it.
Okay. That all makes sense. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Nancy.
You too.
I am going to jump, Erin. I know you're sitting there, and Cheryl, I know you have, but I want to go to...
Get everybody else first.
Okay, I'll get back to you. Jean.
Oh.
Hi, Jean, you can unmute if you want. I have a new mom who's constantly showing me stress more than relaxing. She's in a room all to herself in an area of the house no other animals can get in. I've added extra strength calcium, 1,000 milligram tablets, calcium carbonate. So I'd have to go do the math on that. 8 to 10 tablets, 3 times a day and 3 mils. You're giving her, Jean, can you pop on or put in there how much she weighs?
Hi, can you hear me?
Jen, I'm sorry, I read your name wrong.
It's okay, it's fine. So this is my bad. I didn't weigh her right after she delivered, so I need to do that. She was at 49 pounds right before she delivered, and she's a border collie who just delivered 6 puppies.
Yay.
first time for me, super exciting. The puppies when they came out were 399 grams, 372 grams, 417 grams, 376 grams, 400 grams, 381 grams. Don't know if you know
that. Tight. That's great.
Yeah. So about 12 to 14 ounces between pups. So I'm not sure if I'm giving her too much, not enough, but her stress is making me stress, which does not help.
Yeah. Now remind me how old the pups are.
They are 4 days today.
4 days today. And what are you seeing that's indicating stress to you?
So she's constantly jumping out of her whelp box. I have to go back and encourage her and pat the whelp box and have her lay down. And then sometimes she'll get up and move away from the puppies. And then I have to kind of calm her down and let the puppies come back. And I mean, she does have moments where she lets the puppies nurse, but even when that's happening, she's kind of sitting up and panting. So to me, I feel like that means she's stressed. And so those are the different indicators that, and then, oh, so the room. Yeah. So I brought the room down to 70, 71 degrees, and I'm scared to go any lower.
I'd go lower.
Go lower. Okay.
I would go lower. Yeah. Because it's really difficult for us to tell if the bitch is overheating or stressed.
Okay.
And really both of them are kind of the same, because if you're overheating, you're going to be very stressed. So the situation we kind of put our bitches in is we're pitting survival, self-survival, against maternal instincts. You know, so their body's saying, get the heck out of there, get away from the puppies. And her maternal instincts are saying, no, you have to go in with the puppies. And so they get into this terrible conflict. So I would just keep dropping the temperature unless your puppies are crying all the time, piling on top of each other, never settling, never calming down.
Okay.
Are you seeing any of those behaviors in the puppies?
Not really. I have been lowering the temperature. If I notice that they're starting to get further away from the mom, that's how I've gotten down to 70 so far, because I started around 75 and then slowly lowering from there.
I'd go to 68 off the bat. Have you taken her temperature?
Yeah. Her temperature is normal, right around the 101 range. So she's not like overheating and not dropping. She's staying right around there. That's all I got on that.
Yep. So I'm just thinking of some other things you can do. So I love that you added an adaptive collar. I maybe somebody else can run the numbers on the calcium calculator. What calcium are you using? I see the oral cal.
Yeah, it's just like generic Tums.
Generic Tums.
Yeah, extra strength at 1,000 okay. mg or whatever it is.
So she isn't going to get a lot out of that. Maybe is anybody on that can just run it against the calculator online?
And I've been giving her about a cup of mother's pudding with her meals as well, hoping that that adds in more calcium and nutrition for her.
It will. Yeah, that's a good idea. Still not huge amounts of calcium. And obviously you're adding the calcium carbonate with meals, which is great because that's the most effective way to use it, but I don't have the calculator, so I'll have to look it up and then give you an idea, because you're giving 8,000 calcium carbonate 3 times a day, and the Oral Cal Plus I think is like 175 a milliliter, right. Yeah. So the debate is how much of that 24,000 is she really getting? And we can run the numbers. So a couple of other things I would do is, do you have noise in the room, like a white noise machine? Or
I actually have to use a window unit to get the room to cool down enough.
Oh, great.
That's the white noise.
Okay, that's usually great white noise, as long as it's not blowing on the pups.
Nope.
That sort of droning air conditioner sound is terrific, and that's not helping her.
If she hears someone coming up the stairs, she gets very alert, and then she wants to go see who it is, and then come out of the room and then go greet everybody that might be in the house.
Definitely don't let her do that.
Okay.
Yeah. She does not get to do that.
Okay.
And is the whelping box facing the door?
Her exit out of the box does face the door, but that's okay. The better path for her to get out. The more the other way is too narrow. It's a narrow room.
Right. Yeah, no, but we want her so that she can sit in the box and see whether anybody's coming in. I would add more noise so that it's difficult for her to hear somebody coming up the stairs.
Okay.
Those, that protection instinct, even if they're not aggressive about it, that alertness and that hyperprotection is super powerful in bitches with very young puppies like her. Now, might she be bored? Yeah, sure. She's going to get a lot more bored. there's just no two ways about it. But at 4 days, you shouldn't see a high amount of boredom. 7 days, she might start hanging out outside the box, but we want to get her to settle in better, lie on her side, sleep in with the puppies. And, she may not get there, but it really is worth sort of setting that as a goal and seeing if you can get there in the next couple of days.
Okay.
So temperature, more noise, and I'll check the calcium.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Terrific. Good luck. Let us know.
Okay.
Erin, you've been really patient sitting there with your hand up the whole time. So I'm going to pop to you if you're there.
Hi, Gail. How are you?
I'm good, Erin. How are you?
Good, thanks. So I have a question. One of my females, her last litter, she's had two. Her first was 11. Her second was 12. Her last litter was born January 31st of 2020. I skipped her next cycle just because she had a large litter. She lost a lot of weight. So I wanted to, get her to a healthy weight and where she needed to be before I bred her again. So she's very consistent. She seasons in June. She seasons in December. So we skipped June of 2020. We tried to breed her December of that year.
2020. So 6-7 months ago.
Of 2020. Yeah. We did AI because I'm pretty particular about her. She's a certified therapy dog. So I want to pair accordingly with her temperament, and I pick the stud accordingly. We did an AI. Her progesterone was at 17.5. She was day 16. On day 30, no puppies present. So
And the semen was good.
Oh, yes. Semen was great. You know, I just chalked it up to a fluke. You know, it can happen.
How old is she again? Remind me.
She's four. She's four. Mm-hmm. Okay. So June came around last month. She was bred on day 15. Her progesterone was 18. You know, we did progesterone testing throughout. We did try
outside lab or inside in office?
A vet lab, reproductive vet lab.
So they were sending it out like to IDEX or?
Oh, you mean in-house
right.
lab.
Right.
Because I do have a machine. I do have my own progesterone machine, but no, this time it was at the vet office. They do in-house progesterone. We tried natural breeding and she wanted no part of it. So we collected and did side-by-side AI. Again, great semen. His semen had been tested. Again, same thing. Day 30, check for puppies, no puppies present. She has an appointment at the reproductive vet for some testing on Friday. What do you recommend we look for? Because this is twice.
Yeah, twice isn't good. And twice when it sounds like her timing was good.
Yes.
Was good.
Yes.
So that can happen once, but when it happens twice, you have to really
start questioning. And we use the different stud too, just to make sure. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And so she must have come in season mid-June. I'm just trying to think of where she is. So she's still in diastasis. Right? So
it was early June, but yeah, I mean, it hasn't been that long ago.
So I would definitely check her progesterone. It may be too late, but what we don't know is, did she get pregnant? So that's always our question. Did she get pregnant at all and lose the litter because her progesterone dropped too early? There's a problem with her uterine lining. There was no place for the embryos to attach. Those are questions I would talk to the vet about, the repro vet, absolutely. Because they need to take a look at the lining of her uterus and check that progesterone level. Because if her progesterone is dropping too early, she may have gotten pregnant, but then she basically aborts the puppies. Without progesterone, a bitch can't maintain a pregnancy. And if it's really early prior to like day 40, they just flow out and get reabsorbed and nobody really notices. If it happens later in pregnancy, then it's a real abortion and you see material. But early in a pregnancy, they just appear not pregnant because there's nothing external that's visible. So those would be two things. So the dropping of the progesterone is called luteal insufficiency. I can put that in. Are you familiar with it?
Yes, Gail. I don't know if you recall, probably about a year ago,
we had Sansa.
Yeah, we had to spay her because she was infertile and she had the blocked oviducts and the luteal insufficiency. So yes, I'm quite.
Are they related? Are they related?
They are not related. No, they are not.
Well, that's good. That's positively done. So back to luteal insufficiency. Did you check her progesterone? The current girl during pregnancy.
No, we haven't since then. No, because unfortunately the reproductive vet is not nearby. It's about an hour and a half drive. So, but I'll add that.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, often you can do just a progesterone test through IDEX through your vet. And we always want to remember that we don't necessarily have to go to a repro vet for that. It's a regular IDEX test. They can draw blood, spin it down, send the serum in. And so during pregnancy, you know, when we're timing we're in a little bit more of a rush and we need those results. But honestly, during pregnancy, if you get the results back in 3 days or two days, it's probably not going to be the end of the litter. So you can always pop that one off for the vast majority of GP vets. I would talk about infections. I think you and I had this conversation, if I recall, about...
We've had several.
yeah. I'm really sorry. So looking for... those would be kind of the three things I would be looking at. Endometrial lining. Are the ovaries functioning correctly to maintain the pregnancy? And could there possibly be an infection that is either keeping her from getting pregnant or losing the puppies afterwards? And that's always the problem. I mean, at least we have ultrasound now. We used to just x-ray. And so if a bitch wasn't pregnant on day 57, we just assumed she hadn't gotten pregnant, but she well may have gotten pregnant. She just lost the litter along the way. So with ultrasound now, we're getting that earlier snapshot. There were no resorption sites on the ultrasound or that was mentioned?
No. But see, I took her to my local vet for the ultrasound where I'm going. They probably have better equipment at the reproductive vet. So That'll be something I can ask for.
Yeah, because it will be really important to you to know, can she get pregnant? And is the issue once she's pregnant, or is she not getting pregnant at all? And I don't know how much they'll be able to drill down and answer those, but that's in your head. You know, is this simply now an infertile bitch who no longer can get pregnant, or is something happening that is keeping the pregnancy from being maintained?
Correct. These are great things to find out. So I'm going to do my due diligence on that on Friday. You know, my husband says because she's the working girl now, she's a therapy dog. That's what she wants to do. She doesn't want to have to. He thinks it's funny. But I have a lot of anxious families wanting one of her puppies. So we'll see.
No.
Thank you, Gail, though. I appreciate your time.
Erin, will you let us know?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Good luck on Friday. I hope they give you some good answers.
Thank you.
Mary says, since I've been adding LH to my resources, even for natural breedings, my timing to offer a mating has been better for my girls. Your timing of your breedings, Mary, are you, I don't know.
For the breeding, what has happened since I've started adding LH in, and I know that I'm far enough away from, you know, I'm at LH 4 or 5, and I've confirmed ovulation with the progesterone. I time it just like I would be timing a TCI or something where we're bringing semen in. I mean, the girls are just really happy. They don't get the boys until they are ready. And I tell you, Siggy, when I got to Montana, she hauled into the kennel, turned around and backed up to it. And it is just like, we are ready to go. And whereas before, you know, we think with our progesterone that we would be, the timing would be right, et cetera. But when I combined the LH and the progesterone to confirm ovulation, I'm just getting happier girls and better litters, or bigger litters. And so I really think that sometimes we miss that a little bit when we don't use LH for the natural breedings. I think that it adds a level of certitude about her receptiveness and the timing of the actual mating act that, because I've had girls when, you know, back before we did any of this, man, they'd have to kill a dog, you know, and it had to have been that our timing was just wrong. I mean, I had one male that with one bitch that, and I know my timing had to be wrong all the time. I mean, he'd kind of paw her face and he'd just stay back and look at her.
Like, are you ready?
Yeah. And when we would hold her head, then he'd run around real quick and he'd look to be sure we had her head, you know, and now, I mean, these girls are like, unlock the door, let them in. And so I think LH, especially since we can buy the test over the counter and even get serum from our vet, LH has just, I started doing it because I needed to do a 2-day drive and I couldn't get semen or couldn't get progesterone reliably within the same day, and I'd have a 2-day drive to get to the stud. But since, you know, I've been utilizing that, I just know with certitude that my girl is ready. We have the LH, we have ovulation confirmation, you know, we're checking all the boxes, and they are just happy and eager. And, you know, stars breeding, she only tied with Canuck on LH plus 5. And then on LH plus 6, there was no erection. He was not, she's done.
And sure has 14 puppies. 14,
only 14 puppies.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point, Mary. I think, you know, so I sort of think, and I know you've been doing it a long time, you know, we bred on 9/11/13. Like that was just what we did. And I think of these poor bitches who ovulated on day 17 or something, and we were trying to breed them so early. Even now, though, then we hit the, okay, now we can do progesterone, and it was 5-0 and go. You know, so when they hit 5, they need to be bred. And people feel this tension and this rush. Oh, my gosh, we're at or above 5. We need to hurry up and breed. They are so not ready. There's no rush at that point. It'll be another 4 or 5 days before they're ready to breed. And so I think I agree with you. And maybe it's being so intimate with bitches, not studs, but bitches. Like many, 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 if not most of these girls know what they're doing. They know when they're ready. And we're asking them to do something they're not ready to do. And they physically are not prepared to do that. You know, bitches really only breed about 4 days out of every 6 to 9 months, 6 to 12 months. And so when we ask them to breed when they're not ready, I agree with you. They are not going to be happy. It's hard on them. So I think I would even say that doing LH and progesterone are respectful to bitches, more respectful to the bitches that are doing this work for us.
And all the costs that we spend on trying to get a bitch, you know, pregnant, and LH, you know, when we could buy a set of 6 of them for, you know, $300, it sounds like a lot, but, you know, if our vet's not doing it, we still have that option. You know, now it's just a routine part. I just make sure when she comes in heat, I check the refrigerator. Do I have any kits? Are they expired? What do I need? I get it in. And because I'm trying to plan travel and I'm not even going to get my progesterone back for another 24 hours, I have just actually started, and I know it might sound crazy, but after about 2 to 3 days in, I start just saving the serum and putting it in the freezer. Mm-hmm. I just do a morning draw, put it in the freezer, morning draw, put it in the freezer. And when, and so I start doing that by following for estrus on the cytology. So really using the 3 tools that we have available. Yeah. You know, am I overdoing it? But I don't know, you know,
14 puppies.
Hard to 14 puppies and with an 11-year-old stud after a miss, a complete, well-timed, perfectly timed miss. Because when she missed, we also had LH, we had confirmation of ovulation, and we had well-timed breeding with a proven stud. I didn't see his semen those days that she bred, but I'm assuming that if he was good 3 weeks later and 2 weeks before, he was good then. But this time, you know, 14 puppies, there's just, you know, no doubt without the LH, I could have been either too late or too early because I just would have been guessing.
And I think that's a good point. And you had the 2-day drive, but a lot of us are shipping. And so then it's easily 2 days, if not 3, to organize with the stud dog owner and get it in. So if you know you're not going to breed till LH plus 6, that gives you a lot. LH plus 5, LH plus 6, you have a lot more time to coordinate. So I agree with you. I'm going to jump to Jean, but I personally think if you don't breed a lot, LH becomes sort of a minor expense in ensuring that your bitch gets pregnant with a good sized litter. And it is an extra step, but I'm with you. I haven't not done LH in 18 years now. And so I think it's worth it too. I am gonna jump to Jean. Hi, Jean.
Hello.
Hey there.
Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, good. Help. I need a pregnancy.
I'm sorry, failed TCI. I'm looking
well, at twice in a row. So the first time was probably our fault. We're not sure on the timing. We got the timing right the second time. We're very sure of it. I have questions since I'm so new. I bred cats for 20 years, so I'm not a complete novice, but dogs are very different.
Very different.
So
I always say the opposite, Jean. I say cats are very different.
So I'm trying to do everything right. I had the help of a repro vet locally. I took my dog out of town on exactly the right day. We tried live breeding and very compliant dogs repeated the mating second time with the same stud. The first time we bred the dogs with the TCI, we had what we thought was good sperm. And
doesn't look like it from the numbers.
What?
Is this your first TCI with 143 million?
That was the second time. First time was in November, where we're not sure we had the timing right. In May, we know we had ovulation on Wednesday. We did further progesterone after that. We felt like the best days to breed were Friday and Saturday. The first collection, we didn't get a lot of sperm. We decided to let them try again, but we collected in what we could when, you know, they wouldn't breed. We collected the ejaculate from the miss, and then we kept it and we tried them again and we collected them again. We combined that. We took it down to, without an extender, to the repro vet, which is supposedly one of the biggest and best in the country, Josie Ranch down in Dallas, which everybody tells me is, you know, Dr. Esmond is the best there is. So I don't have any questions about their ability to get the job done.
This is the semen I'm looking at, 143 million, 51%.
That's correct.
And you collected the 143 and the 463, and you took that to the vet for a TCI?
The first TCI was the 143 million. That was two collections in the same day. Okay. 51% was good, 49% missing heads. The second day, we collected right before the procedure with an actual collection kit. First time we just winged it with, you know, the nearest baggie we could grab, like, you know.
I love stud dogs.
Yeah. So day two, we had 463 million, but we had the same 49% missing heads. And to me, that is,
he's that sterile. Tells me. That he's sterile. That is the definition.
No, he's got live puppies on the ground before, during, and after. From natural
breedings.
Yes, all of them.
Yeah.
So we're going to do a different stud. Is there something that I should be doing with my maiden bitch to make sure that it's not anything to do with her? Is there, my repro vet here tells me she's not ready to do a uterine biopsy or anything like that. She thinks that's really overkill, jumping the gun. And I really, of course, don't want to do that unless there's reason to do it. The new stud owner that I'm talking to seriously has a dog related to that other dog, and because I really was attached to that particular line. And he's got bunches of big litters. So I would like to do a live mating. the stud owner would prefer it if I would do fresh chilled with surgical. As a cat breeder, we don't do surgical breedings. Anytime we cut on a uterus, we consider that to be damage to the uterus. Offspring won't attach to the uterus, and it's just really something we don't do. So maybe my bias is causing my hesitation there, but I've always understood that live matings are the most successful breedings, and why wouldn't I want to go to the ends of the earth to make that happen if I can at this point when I'm on breeding number three, you know, season number three, trying to get puppies for the first time. So I'm here for advice.
Is the stud dog owner willing to do a natural breeding?
If I do a standard vaginal culture, that's not a problem. A mycoplasma test that only, I think it's Cornell and University of Michigan will do. And I don't have any problem doing that either, even though everybody says, yeah, we don't really do that anymore. But
yeah,
if you want to do it. But, you know, it's her stud dog, and I don't have an issue with going through whatever protocol she feels is acceptable, but I also don't want to throw away a couple of few thousand dollars again, hotel bills and travel and TCIs and or surgical TCIs and all of this just to be shooting myself in the foot again. So here I am.
Let's talk pros and cons. So I'm just going to go back to the breeding that just missed. He may have puppies in the ground because natural breedings can compensate, but that's really bad semen. It's just really bad semen. And so the morphology interferes with the motility. It's not like they're two separate things that, oh, there's 51% good sperm and they're motile and so it's all good. So I just want to throw that out there that's a huge question mark on whether she is the issue or he was just subfertile for anything other than a natural. So there's a big question mark for her. So let's talk pros and cons about surgicals versus naturals. In pretty much all of the literature, natural breedings with a fertile male are going to give you the highest likelihood of pregnancy and the largest litter. Now, I want to qualify that. The numbers aren't a huge amount more than a well-timed TCI or a well-timed surgical, but they're more. And the litter size is about one puppy more. So, you know, it's not a home run. It's not like you have a 99% chance with a natural and you're going to get 14 puppies. It's a little bit more likely, a little bit larger litter. But what you lose, so it's great, this sounds like a very fertile stud dog. What you're going to lose is the ability to look at her uterus. So in dogs, the way surgicals are done, we actually don't cut the uterus. The semen is injected in with a syringe and a very, very small needle injected into half of it in one horn, half of it in the other horn. So the surgical itself is, might there be a small amount of scar tissue at the point of insemination? Yes, but it's pretty much across hundreds of thousands, if not more, dogs. There's no evidence that it increases C-section rates, decreases fertility, anything like that, because it's a pretty benign procedure in the uterus. It's not a benign procedure to the bitch, obviously. So it is abdominal surgery. She is fully anesthetized. She's cut open. She has to recover from that. I don't think we ever want to downplay that surgery. The vast, vast, vast majority of bitches come through fine. I know of one bitch that got MRSA from it and she survived, but it was sort of touch and go. But the vast majority of bitches do pretty well. But it's like recovering from a spay. They're going to have a couple bad days, and then they're going to be limited in their activity. But what the vet gets to do is pull the uterus out of the abdomen, and it's bigger than a cat's uterus, but it's not a big thing. And they can sort of feel through it. So they're not opening the uterus, but they're feeling the uterus, and they're looking for places where the endometrial lining is abnormal. So that typically in dogs is going to be a uterine cyst. And that is part of this syndrome we have in dogs called CEH, cystic endometrial hyperplasia, which is not an uncommon thing in dogs. It many bitches as they age are going to develop it. Some of them are going to develop it younger. But what it does is it changes the lining of that uterus so that the eggs can't implant at that spot. And so, and you know, the embryos kind of line up in the uterus, and we don't really know what happens, but I don't think they go hunting for the right spot. Like they try and implant and they can or they can't. So the benefit of seeing the uterus is a pro for doing a surgical. The con is you're doing abdominal surgery on your bitch. Naturals and surgical. No, I shouldn't say that. It isn't the surgical that is the lowest rate. It's usually because we're using poor semen. So surgicals have the lowest success rate, but I don't think it's the procedure. I think it's we're just usually using really bad semen when we do surgicals, or we're working with a possibly infertile animal. So I would probably go for a natural because I have a bias towards naturals, but you are.
I do drop, too.
Yeah. You're going to drop a lot of money on these tests that are only really relevant to making the stud dog owner feel better and alleviating you of the responsibility if he comes down with an infection. They aren't going to tell you a whole lot about her fertility. I shouldn't say that. I mean, if they come back with some huge infection, well, you do have an answer there.
Yeah,
but they're pretty rare. They really are. We tend to toss them around as if they were common when in reality, they're pretty rare. So
this is a young, healthy, fit bitch who leads a very sheltered life.
Well, I mean, shelter her now.
She goes to dog training. She goes to dog trials, and she has a regular life. I have a dock diving pool in my backyard, and other dogs come here. But she hasn't been pumped by every dog in the neighborhood.
Okay.
That kind of sheltering. She is well managed, so to speak.
Yeah. So
I don't feel like she's sick in any way.
Probably the only other thing I would say is on this breeding, I would time her season within an inch of her life. And I know you're saying you're confident in the numbers, but I hear that a lot. And then I look at the numbers, I'm like, oh, you were way too early. And so being like, doing LH, as Mary was just describing, you can buy the tests. You can go to your GP to have them get the serum every morning. I mean, these aren't big stretches, and we are always estimating ovulation in a bitch. I don't actually know if that's true in a queen, but in a bitch, there is no definitive way to know that ovulation took place. We're always estimating it. So the more tools we use to estimate ovulation, the better our breedings are.
Okay. So I have one more question about what I might do for the bitch. I've been advised, and I don't really like this advice, but I'm going to throw it out there. I've been advised that when she comes into season, either do it now and then again when she comes in season, or when she comes in season, put her on antibiotics. And I am not one to throw antibiotics at the wall when nothing exists, unless
I'm not either. And I don't think you have evidence that this was her issue. Now, do your cultures and right. get the results back on those. And then there may be a medical reason to do antibiotics. Okay. But I'm with you. Without medical necessity, it really bothers me to put them on antibiotics.
Yeah.
So is that helpful?
Yes, very helpful. I appreciate it. And it's kind of a relief. I kind of look at my dog every day thinking something's got to be wrong with her. I just can't see it. And I just don't, I really deep down don't believe it. But then there's the she didn't get pregnant and I relied on the advice of experts. So,
well, you know, it's one of the reasons that Avidog exists, actually, because it isn't that we don't trust our experts. All of us use the expertise of ReproVets, but many eyes looking at a problem, many smart, educated eyes looking at a problem, we have found has helped a lot. So share with us, put it on the Facebook page, let people know on it, you know, because we are guessing. That's the thing we always want to remember. Yes, we do progesterone testing. Yes, that's a good number, but in dogs, it does not definitively tell us when ovulation occurred.
Yeah, and I did put it on the website. Everybody thought I was just right on. And
well, there you go. I mean, that it's like the really bad semen.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't blame your bitch.
Well, 30 days later, nobody was more surprised than me that she wasn't pregnant because she was showing all the signs. And
she may have gotten pregnant, Jane.
Yeah,
that we always want to remember that because the quality of the DNA in the sperm affects whether those embryos survive.
Yeah,
it affects the number of embryos that implant and it affects how many stillborns you have. And okay. So when you're looking at weak semen, it just may not have been compatible. So I'm glad you're going to another boy and let us know what the culture is.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate your help.
Yeah. Good luck.
Thanks. Bye.
Barbara Cooper says, how do you check for male-female compatibility in canine data? For those of you who aren't in Goldens or Labs or Tollers, canine data is an open database with hundreds of thousands of dogs in them where you can do test breedings and things like that. Unfortunately, Barbara, there really isn't any way to look at canine data to look for compatibility outside of running. So there's a vertical pedigree line and that brings in all of the siblings and the aunts and the uncles. And then once you have the vertical pedigree, you can look at hips, elbows, and longevity. Those are the three things to consider. And then you can also do the five generation pedigree, where it'll take you back the five generations and you can again do hips, elbows, and longevity. Everything else about whether that's a good pedigree or not is going to come from other breeders who will share information, who will look at that pedigree and go, "Ooh, you should not do that, Barbara," or, "Wow, that's a great pedigree." And unfortunately, there's actually a Facebook page called, oh, look it up, Barbara. It's like, who should I breed this bitch to? I can't remember the name of it. And you put your bitch's pedigree on there and people will give you input on what lines they think would be compatible. Now, it can be a little random, but I've found some interesting stud dogs on it. So that's an option, or talk to the breeders you know and ask them which lines they would avoid. Not necessarily why, just which lines would you avoid? You can see if they'll tell you why. But I know I just had a really bad experience with a stud dog owner who I adore. I wasn't able to breed to her dogs. And through the grapevine, somebody said that I said he had a horrible disease and that he passed it on, which is actually not true. I'd never said it. In fact, I said the opposite. And so she's really hurt. So I simply won't look at pedigrees anymore and give people specific advice because it ends up getting passed through the grapevine and it's hurtful to the stud dog owner. It's hurtful to me, but the breeders that you're close with would be the ones that I would turn to and say, you know, do you know some stud dogs to consider? And what do you think of this one? So That's the best we can do. Canine data gives you a great starting point, but it doesn't solve that problem, unfortunately. Okay. I see you nod your head, shake your head. I'm sorry, it's not easier. So Cheryl, let's jump to you. You've been there a long time. Hang on, you're muted.
Okay, sorry. y'all can answer my question on the Facebook group if we're taking too much time, but I am gonna keep my puppies till they're probably 12 weeks old this time. I've always let them go at between eight and nine, but because the breed is so sensitive and a lot of my puppy people have had problems, I've decided to just try this as an experiment. So what do I need to know? What do I need to do? It's a lot of work.
Rest. Stop sleeping.
But I mean, what do I be doing with them past that age? I mean, I do a lot with them before then, but it kind of seems daunting, you know, and I'm, yeah.
It is daunting, I have to say. I mean, I did that experiment. I think it's a good experiment to do, you know, because you and I have talked about this. I think this would be a great experiment to do. But so they should not be together, in my opinion, much after 10 weeks, given they're a sporting breed and, you know, sort of if they're a toy breed, it's different. But for medium, large and giant breeds, you get a lot more structure in the pack relationship that you really don't want puppies to practice. So from 10 to 12 weeks, 10 weeks, they can stay in the pen and you're going to do everything you've been doing, take them on car rides, bring people in, take them out, do your nomograph. From 10 to 12 weeks, you kind of need to raise them like you only have one. And super complicated. Having done it, it just about killed me. I think I had 9 puppies. And so what I did was I rotated who was together in the pen, and it was never the same. Like I would put 4 in the pen and 5 would be crated or with me or with a family member. And the 4 were never the same. So, you know, red was with black and blue one day, and then she was with yellow and orange when she went back in the pen. They've got to have individual training, individual crate training. You can start on potty training, but I'll be honest, I didn't. I had expense with potty boxes because I just couldn't potty train 9 puppies. You'll have to think about your setup and your energy and how much help you have and things like that. But you can. There's no reason you have to potty train them before they go home. You just want to make sure you've litter box trained them.
Okay.
There's no reason to house train them. But leash, cues, mouthing, tag lines, going into town car rides, and not car rides all piled together in the crate, but starting individual things. All that kind of needs to happen. With things like sounds and sights, you can do a lot of that as a group. Lots of adventure walks. I walk their little heinies off. Yeah, you've got a little bit more of a challenge with the heat.
Right.
It's a little harder, but I would try to get them. They can be outside on an adventure walk together. That isn't going to cause problems. It's
over an area and a great big fan, you know, so they can have a pool and so they can at least be out morning and evening.
Yeah. What you want to watch is that the bullies just become bigger bullies and the guys that aren't bullies just keep getting pounded on. You gotta not let that happen. So that's when you have to separate them.
Okay.
And that you'll usually see between 10 and 12 weeks. You know, the bullies just get bullier and the ones that are being bullied just get more beaten down.
Okay. So one other thing with that. So I have really high expectations of this litter. It's almost the repeat breeding of our best in show dog. It's 3/4 a pedigree. So I do not want to let the top puppies go even then, because I don't want to make a mistake. So I may keep two or three, maybe as long as 6 months. So
you are a good woman.
They need to be completely separated, right? Completely.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, so my rule of thumb is they can be together an hour a day. And the rest of the time they're separated. So they can have a playtime, but it's pretty small.
Okay. They could be with I'm asking
your
this.
Adults.
Could adult that extra time in sure. addition to together. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think is particularly important for you because you want these to be confident show dogs.
Right.
You know, they're not just going to go hang out in an apartment somewhere. You need them to feel like all three of them or two of them can go out there and take the world by a storm. So you can't have anybody being pounded down by a brother or sister. And that's the importance of separating. So they don't overly bond. And I have to say, I have an N of one Quaker in my life, but they bond pretty tightly. I mean, he's more tightly bonded to us than our Goldens ever have been. And so you don't want them to bond to each other and then you have to separate them and they go differently and that shakes up their world in a difficult way. Okay. So is that helpful?
Yes. Yeah, should I have them should I get in puppy classes with them individually, the ones that are staying definitely?
Would be great.
Take a class and then bring all that home, but really the puppy needs to go, doesn't it? Each individual. No,
but if you talk to your trainer, like if it was me, I'd go in and say, look, I'm going to bring a different puppy every week. I'm really not here for the training. I'm here to get the puppies out with the experience. Do you care? And frankly, they probably won't be able to tell them apart. So, you know, just go, want to give every puppy that experience less of the actual training, because you can do that at home, you can take them to town, but what they need is the experience of going to class.
Okay.
Good luck. I'm going to try and grab a few more people. Good luck. Okay. Who else do I have? I'm going to go down to Teresa. Oh, Jen, if you're still on, I think you're giving plenty of calcium. I pulled the calculator up and I think you're fine on the calcium. What you may want to do is change the type of calcium and maybe go to a calcium citrate, the bulk calcium citrate, because it may still be a calcium issue and she's just not getting enough calcium out of what you're using.
Okay,
sure. Teresa.
Hello.
Hey there. How are you?
Going good. Going good. I feel for Jen. I've had a maiden bitch and we had two litters together and keep the room cool and lots of that calcium because that's the secret. Yeah.
It's the secret ingredient.
It is the secret. Boy, since I found you guys, I'm having success and it's good. So thank you.
I'm so glad. You're looking to start feeding solid food number of times a day.
Yep.
So when, I'll tell you what happens with me and maybe some folks can start in. So the first day I typically feed one or two meals.
Yes.
It really depends upon the litter. Some puppies, and I'm looking at some Labrador breeders on here, so I know they're going to laugh at this, but some of my litters are like, what is that? And why did you put that in front of me? No interest in eating whatsoever. It doesn't matter if I warm it. It just doesn't matter. Other litters are like, where has this been my entire life? It's manna from heaven. And so it really will depend upon your puppies. What I don't want to do is overburden their system the first day and end up with diarrhea. So I'm walking that line between starting them on solid food and not getting diarrhea out of it. So I do one or two meals the first day. I'll often just do an evening meal the first day that's it. And then the next day I see how the stools did and I start to increase it. I go to 4 meals a day and I stay at 4 meals a day until typically the week they go home or even when they go home. And it all depends upon their weights and how they're eating. If they're turning down food and they're only eating a third of their meals, then I'm going to go to 3 times a day. I send them home on 3 times a day. I just tell their owners to start at 3 times a day. I don't do 5 times a day because then I think you're beginning to butt up against house training and potty training. And we are trying to get that balance between keeping them growing, giving them enough nutrition, but not putting so much in their system that your house training is going to fall apart. Go to pot is what I was going to say. Ha ha. So if that's helpful, that's how I think about it. I'm sure there's lots and lots and lots of different ways to do it, but that's how I think about it. And I'm always looking at their stools to make sure that they're staying good while I do this.
Yeah, so I did what you had said in your program before, start, 2 meals and then add different things. Now, I don't have the vitamins here because it's expensive to get it to Canada.
It's horrible to get it to Canada. Yeah.
And we don't have, I don't trust anything else that we have available. So I'm without that. But good quality dog food is what I feed.
Oh, good. So, yeah. That's good.
And the stools have been staying fairly good. Probably the little ones that are licking more of the liquid than absorbing the solids, they're softer, but it's been going fairly well. And then the other question is, over a period, is that 12 hours or are we looking at a day considered 16 hours, those meals?
Yeah. So the way that I do it is I don't feed when I wake up in the morning because I can't stand puppies waking me up in the morning. So I get up, we putz around, we have our coffee, we go spend a little time with them, and then I get around to feeding them. So that me getting up doesn't trigger breakfast is coming. And then we'll feed 4 meals, and our last meal is usually 10 or 11 o'clock at night. And that's often a pretty big meal. We take them out, they usually all poop, we give them a pretty big meal, but I want to hold them over, the 8 hours it's going to be during the night. And I don't want them waking me up because they're hungry. We had this on the Facebook page the other day. If we did, I'd probably leave food for them so that they're not starving in the middle of the night, both for their sakes and for my sleep. So that's how I think about the meal. I want that late night meal. Now, I will say the vast majority of our pups are going out to poop in the morning. First thing, they're going outside. So they wait for us and we take them outside when we wake up. And we might have one or two poops during the night, but most of them are trying to hold their feces until we get them out. If you find house trainings falling apart, then I would leave food for them rather than give them that big meal.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm using the puppy trays.
And so they can poop. You don't want to put them in a position where they can't poop. There's no place to go. But if they poop in the night, it's not a big deal. You just don't want them finger painting with it or something.
Woke up to that and that's disgusting.
It's horrible. It's horrible. Way to wake up. It really is.
There is not enough coffee in the world for one of those visits.
Yeah. You start doing Irish coffee pretty quickly with that.
Yeah. That was pee pads and poop. And it was like, there's got to be a better solution to that. So
it actually is the whole motivation why I started potty training, because I'm like, I just can't deal with this.
No.
Good luck. Let us know how it goes.
Thank you.
Cool. Yep. Sandy. Ozzy's weight's up. Can you unmute or are you just going to do it on? You can't unmute. You're muted.
There we go.
Hi.
There, it took me a minute to find out. Hi. I have never had a girl not, I keep my labs lean. Most people look at my labs and say, why are your labs so skinny? And I say, my labs aren't skinny. They're just not fat. Ozzy's definitely not fat, but I think she's still a little too heavy, and she's been back on her maintenance amount for several weeks now. So I'm thinking I need to go ahead and cut her some more.
But you can cut her, you know, you can look up the pumpkin diet in Puppy College. Mm-hmm. Is it the pumpkin diet or the canned food diet?
Okay.
Chris has both of those in there. Just look on weight. Just search for weight in Puppy College and it'll come up. And so there you're swapping either pumpkin or canned food for some of her kibble. Is she on kibble or is she on raw?
No, she's on raw.
So you're going to, go with pumpkin.
Okay.
Because the canned food and raw are pretty close, same water content.
Yeah.
So go with pumpkin. You'll keep the bulk up. So she won't get super hungry, but you'll cut the calories. The other thing you can do is, do you feed one raw meat or do you feed a variety?
I feed a variety.
So start, go through and look for the lowest calorie meats and move her to those for a little while. Sort of get her system restarted. For whatever reason, we all sort of face it in our lives. And our systems aren't quite as effective as they used to be. And so just sort of let her get reset there.
Okay.
And, you know, how old is she now? She's not that
old. She is three. No, she's not. Oh, she's three. She'll be four in October. This was her first litter. And I just really have been surprised, you know, with Annie, I've got to be careful not to cut her back too much or she gets bone thin. And this was her first litter and she's still just a little. I went and looked at the Purina body score today. And I definitely think by my standard, she's a six, not a five. She's a six.
Okay. Yeah, you definitely want to get her back.
Like, you know, you can discern the waist, but not much. She's still got a cut, but it's just not used to what I see in my girls. So, yeah.
Yeah. So just swap out pumpkin. Buy the pumpkin now because it will be out as Thanksgiving approaches. Last year, I couldn't get it for 5 months.
Stock up now.
Get it by the case. You can get it. You can get organic pumpkin from Amazon, the Amazon version, by the case. It's pretty inexpensive stuff.
Hot, cheap. Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah, and low calorie. And most of them love it. They just love it.
Yeah, very good. Well, thanks for that.
Yeah.
If only I could eat pumpkin and get the weight off I need to get off.
I know, I wish somebody would feed me pumpkin.
All right, thanks.
Okay, who did I miss? And I'm looking at Jen's question about, Jen put in the calcium citrate tablets. I would go with the bulk calcium citrate. Did anybody stick it in? From Amazon or from bulk supplements, I think is the name of it. And the great thing about the bulk is that you can give as little or as much. I'm sticking it in the chat if somebody else hasn't done it. Here you go, Jen. You can give a pinch, you can give a tablespoon. It's really easy to use. I've used it for years and years. I know a lot of us use it. It's inexpensive and much easier than tablets or even capsules.
This is perfect. Exactly what I needed. Thank you.
Great. Good luck. I hope she does well. Let us know on the Facebook page.
Absolutely.
And let me know. Guys, you have wasted a perfectly good hour and 45 minutes talking about our favorite topic, dog breeding and puppies. So it was wonderful to see you guys today. I really loved it. This will be up probably tomorrow or the next day. So if you need to re-listen to anything or look at the chat, it will be on the A to Z page. So great to see everybody. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.